it's affected it a lot. I write by going on stage and messing around and, you know, doing a lot of open mics and honing the bits that way. So I've had to learn to just trust in myself to sit and write and then edit as I write and edit in my head and then go over it in my head. I've just had to learn to trust in that.
That's Patton Oswalt talking about how the pandemic has affected how he approaches his stand-up and his writing process. Obviously, all of us stand-ups have had to kind of adjust because we don't have live audiences to perform in front of for the most part. So I thought it was a really interesting insight into how he's been developing material for this upcoming show that he has this Saturday, February 20th, 6 p.m. Pacific time. You can go to rushtix.com to get tickets. If you haven't seen him, he's terrific. And some of the proceeds from the show go to Alice's Kids, a good cause. So go get some tickets, support a good cause, have a good time. He's a really terrific stand-up, somebody I've always really admired. His writing is really great and a great storyteller. So we have a cool conversation about just stand-up, his approach to stand-up, his how he writes and things he's talking about these days and how he's developed over the years as a performer and stand-up. So hope you enjoy it and check out his show February 20th, Saturday. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Very excited to have a really great comedian on, actor, writer, who I've admired for a long, long time and get to talk to him about all his great work. You know him from his specials, Emmy and Grammy Award-winning specials, Parks and Recreation, The King of Queens, and he's currently playing Principal Durbin on the NBC Universal Comedy AP Bio. And on February 20th at 6 p.m. Pacific time, he's going to have an interactive night of stand-up, commentary, Q&A, and raising money for Alice's Kids. And the intro is so long, I forgot who this is now. Hey, Patton, how are you? Nice to have you on the show. Patton Oswalt.
How you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm really excited about the stand-up that you're doing. And how is it? It's going to be a live stream broadcast, but I was reading that there's going to be audience members, which is great because you'll have, you know, feedback and all that. Well, how are you working that? Obviously, social distancing and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how the tech side of it is. It's me. I'm just online. I'm not with anybody.
Right.
But what they can do, RushTix is able to pipe in some of the laughter of other people watching on their monitors. So you can feel that, you know, that response. And then also people can post questions in real time. So it's going to feel like, you know, we're actually connecting with each other and interacting and going back and forth. And RushTix is really good at doing that.
That's great. And the Q&A is pretty wide open. Is that just something you wanted to do to kind of, since you can't be in the room with them as a performer, kind of give it a little bit more of an interactive feel?
Yeah, I mean, it was partially selfishly for me. I wanted that, like, to hear that laughter. But then I also wanted the audience to feel like, oh, I'm with strangers, but we're connecting. That's part of the fun of going to a concert or a movie or a comedy show, is that you're sitting in the dark with people you don't know, but you're all like, oh, we all just agreed on that thing spontaneously. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And the Q&A part of it will just allow be an extension of that, where you guys you'll just open it up to whatever people want to talk about, I would imagine.
Yeah, exactly. There's a VIP Q&A afterward, which I'm very flattered to say was sold out. But then people can, like, we can talk face to face and just, you know, go back and forth about stuff. So that should be really interesting.
So are there any particular themes, you know, you're hitting on this go around that you've been focusing on in terms of the material?
I mean, just whatever's going on right now, the isolation and the madness of everything, it's the juxtaposition of being stuck in your house where you're feeling like you're frozen in time and then outside massive history is unrolling.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's a great way of putting it. Yeah. How's the writing, like, how's the writing been for you in the pandemic? Obviously, it gives you time. You get to be home, you know, with your kid and all that, which is great. But how's it affected your writing in terms of, like, the fact that we can't, I don't want to speak for you, but, you know, my interaction with the world feeds my writing, right? Like, I tend to respond to things emotionally, and then I jot down a note and I start riffing. How has it affected your writing, the process for you?
It's affected it a lot. I write by going on stage and messing around and, you know, doing a lot of open mics and honing the bits that way. So I've had to learn to just trust in myself to sit and write and then edit as I write and edit in my head and then go over it in my head. I've just had to learn to trust in that.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
Yeah. Are you finding the is it hard to not talk about the pandemic a lot and the effect it's having on your life because it's such a
I'm not doing the whole hour isn't about the pandemic, but you have to mention it or you just look insane.
Mm.
You look like you've lost your mind. Like, does he not know what's going on?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Wow, you know, you're talking about everything. What about that blizzard we had, huh? Wait, there's a pandemic. Wait.
Right.
And has the downtime been good for you? Like, you know, I've found that it's been good and some days it's not been good, where you kind of feel like, you say, we're frozen here and you want to do more and you can't, and then you kind of have to talk yourself down from it, you know. And how has that affected you, just either on a personal level or in terms of the work you do?
It's hard to give a generalized answer for that, because it's so moment to moment, day to day with me. You know, some days I'm okay with it, or I fooled myself into going, well, give yourself some perspective on this will be okay. And there's other days when I'm just paralyzed with rage or despair, or just despair with, like, of what everyone else must be going through right now. You know, it really, you know, you think of the lonely people out there, you think of the people that are needy, and you know, it's hard not to open yourself up to that. But then sometimes, out of survival sake, you have to close up against that, because empathy can be the enemy sometimes. And then you feel even worse.
Yeah.
You know, like, self-care can make you feel guilty. So the whole thing is just this vicious little, you know, Ouroboros, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's hard not to, you know, follow just what happened with Trump and the insurrection and the whole 4 years. And I just found that there have been days where I just can't even just turn the TV on, because, you know, I start putting on MSNBC or whatever it might be, and I'm screaming at the television and I'm like, how did we get here? You know?
Well, you need to take a sanity bath. You can't look at the news. There's days when I just don't look at Twitter. I don't go to my news sites. I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? In doing this, I'm making myself ineffective for when, you know, it's going to count, for when, you know, you need to rally people to go vote or your, you know, phone bank or whatever. So you can't interact with it every day. It's not healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I got really disenchanted. You know, we just talked that I got COVID, and just being in that. And by the way, you know, the people that were coming up to me saying that this was like, oh, you know, it's just a hoax. It's like, it wasn't the crazy cat lady down the street with the pilly sweater that never leaves her house. Like, these were, you know, ostensibly well-educated people that knew better. And
right.
And just didn't care. Like, I was in the gym of my hotel, I walk by and I see a nanny with three kids, 6, 8, and 10. This is during June. They're all playing on the treadmills and everything. Like they were game toys in a playground. And I tend to be like, and my wife tries to get me to do this less, but like, I feel like if you're going to change something, you got to say something, right? Like, you got to say something. So
yeah.
I call the GM over. I think you may be like that too. And I'm like, what are you doing? And he goes to me, what? I go, what do you mean? What? I go, you have kids with no masks and then they're running, touching everything. He goes, well, the county's not mandating masks, so we aren't. And I'm like, well, you think you put a big round sticker on the floor that says every 6 feet, and that fixes everything? I said, you're going to kill people. And he just didn't care. And I got really disenchanted after that, you know? And I'm like, well, if this isn't going to get people to rally together as opposed to dividing them, well, what is, you know? And I don't know how it's affected you in the overall, but that's really been a big slap in the face for me.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you said something I was sort of that stuck with me about comedy and anger. You had said something along the lines like, when you're younger, anger and comedy mesh, but I don't think as you get older, it really meshes. I think the best anger is the stuff that you're pointing at yourself. Like, how did that?
Oh, yeah.
I never really sort of looked at it that way, but you're right. Because I do think a lot of us start with out in this with sort of the anger and isn't this bad and isn't this fucked up. And then how did you kind of arrive at that, and how did you make that turn?
I arrived at that through confidence. I mean, when you're young, you don't have the confidence. You don't want to, you're afraid of not looking cool or not looking like you're totally in control of things. You're so scared up on that stage. So of course it's much easier to go, this sucks and this is stupid and look how smart I am, by pointing out how everything is lame. It's when you get older and you're more comfortable on stage, and you're like, oh, let me tell you about this stupid thing I did. And I really learned something kind of amazing about myself in through my stupidity.
Yeah. Yeah. That's totally true. I mean, you also talked about getting, how did you feel about Carlin, who I love, toward the end, when you mentioned the anger thing, it's sort of, I had always felt like he was just really angry at the end. Still funny, but like the anger almost sometimes I felt like dominated the comedy a little bit. Did that ever strike you at all? Did you ever feel that way?
Well, I mean, you know, I think he was, in a way, I think he was justified in his anger because he had literally been talking about this stuff since the late 60s and warning people. And then he just watched the country absolutely go the wrong way, first in the 80s with all the conservatives. And then the way he watched his generation age, the way he watched the baby boomers age must have made him feel disgusted with, you know, the greed and the selfishness. So, you know, unfortunately, he was justified in his rage. Sometimes it was hard to watch, but he was never not. And also he was at the point where he's like, I can't make jokes about this anymore. I mean, God, people, you know, see what's happening. Yeah. Like, so in a way it was still fascinating, but sometimes it was difficult to watch.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting. I didn't think of it that way, but you're right. Like he did have a long history of hitting things on over and over and over. I don't know why and you're right. He must have just gotten to the point where it's like, how many times do I have to say this to you people? You know?
And, right. Exactly. Yeah. This is exhausting.
Yeah. And in talking about sort of anger and comedy, you had mentioned that if you want to get to somebody or sort of really drive your enemies crazy, for lack of a better term, you're on stage. Instead of cursing at what you hate, like celebrate the alternative and make that seem better. And that's what drives, you know, people crazy. So explain that a little bit more. I thought that was a really clever way of like approaching things.
Well, if you're pushing against hate and exclusion, but you're doing it with hatred and exclusion and pointing something out, that in a weird way, that makes them more comfortable with whatever they hate or whatever they want to exclude. So if you find a funny way to embrace what the alternative thing is, and you're actually up there enjoying the stuff and going, you can hate all you want, it doesn't matter, I'm just going to go do the stuff I like, then they don't have any, like, their energy comes from the negativity. So if you don't give them any negativity back in a weird way, that's a way to make them even, you know, angrier. I've always said this about the internet. Whenever you point out, say something snarky or mean on the internet, people are like, yeah, that's, you know, but if you say something positive or try to promote something, oh my God, the pushback, you know, is, I remember I did an interview for the Onion. This is years ago. I did this very long interview about just life and whatever I was working on. And I was being snarky about this TV show and snarky about this movie and blah, blah, politics and everything. And there was like 60 comments under the interview of people like, yeah, he's okay. He's pretty funny. I like, you know, it was just kind of because I was being negative and mean. And then later on, I did an interview with the AV Club, the Onion AV Club. And I was promoting a little film festival that I had curated at the New Beverly. But the day they called me, I had this really bad stomach flu. And I said, I will talk to you as long as I can, but I'm really sick. And I think my voice is going to go out, but I want to do this interview. So it's a very short interview, and I'm just talking about the films I booked and why I love them. That's all it was. And there were, and I'm not exaggerating, there were about 600 comments under this thing. And it was all people, oh, so these are the only good films? Fuck that guy. Like, what? It was like, they sincerity and optimism, they weren't used to that. And it made them so angry. It was amazing to see that.
That's exactly right. I mean, I got an interesting perspective on Twitter, and I know you've done a lot with Twitter over the years and you're great at it. My wife, who's not in, she works in museums. She's not in this business in any capacity, but she'll like look at my, you know, Instagram or Facebook or Twitter. And she goes, you know, I like Instagram. I feel like people are kind of like normal and pretty nice there, but Twitter, people are like mean for no reason. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it can happen. I don't know if it's like a voice that they get and they don't know how to use the voice effectively. So they just think, okay, I'm going to just be really negative. Like, How have you navigated that yourself when you're putting out, obviously you're putting out really great material. Some of it can be inflammatory for some people. I mean, obviously you probably don't respond to some of these comments. Like and how has it changed for you in Twitter over the years? Because I think it's gotten worse, right? In that way?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, getting over negativity comes from age and wisdom. And by the way, age and wisdom doesn't cure you of negativity. I still have my days where something pisses me off so much that I just, you know, write something mean or something angry and I let that get the better of me. It's something you're going to work with your whole life, but less and less, you'll rely on it less and less because you're more secure with who you are as a person.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Do you ever see yourself, so like past material, like, you know, you did earlier on and or whatever, because I've done this where you just go, oh boy, I wish I did that differently, or I wish I didn't do it that way, or whatever.
Of course.
Yeah.
So much material that I did starting out because we didn't know any fucking better. And now you got to like, you just own it and go, I was young. I didn't know any better. And I wasn't able to rise above what I was seeing around me media wise and culture wise. And I wish I could, but I didn't. And now I have, like, I know better now.
Yeah.
And you know, these people that are like, I never apologize. I never have any regrets. Like, well, you're okay. You're lying. One, you're lying. But two, if that were true, it means that you have never evolved or grown in your life. That you decided stuff around the age 13 and you froze right there and that's it. Like, that's a sad way to live your life.
Yeah.
You make big mistakes and you go, oh, ugh, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. And the stuff that's the most rewarding is the stuff that's self-reflective, you know. I accidentally killed a deer because I wanted to be cool with my friends. And this happened like 2 years ago. And I just felt horrible about it. It was the worst. Like, they all hunt and I don't hunt. And they're standing and then all of a sudden in the French driveway and all of a sudden a deer shows up and they're like, oh, go ahead, shoot the deer. And I'm like, no, I'm not into this. No. And I'm like, oh God. And I turned into a 12-year-old and basically took the crossbow and I go, I know, I'm going to try to make everybody happy. And when I try to, you know, you try to make everybody happy, you make nobody happy. And I said, I'm going to shoot at the deer in my mind and accidentally miss the deer and they'll scare the deer away and he'll be free and I'll look cool like I tried. So I aimed at the thing. I never shot a crossbow in my life and I aimed high. And just as I aimed, the deer stepped into the shot and I killed it. I shot it like, and I was crushed. Like, I went back into the house and started crying to my wife, like, I just killed an animal. And then I donated like $150 to a wildlife fund the next day. Like, I felt so horrible. But when you do that, and then you're right, it is hard to get to that point to reveal that side of you. But when you do, it's so rewarding because a lot of people, it resonates with people. Do you find that? Like, not that specific moment, but what that represents resonates with people, I find. Do you find the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, if you're willing to take that leap of faith, people will almost always rise to the occasion and follow you.
Yeah,
you know, but you have to do it with full confidence and humility. But it's hard to do that all the time.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah. All right, cool, man. There you go. That's Patton Oswalt. Really enjoyed having him on and getting to kind of get an insight into you know, how somebody who's really, really great at what he does works and approaches everything. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you can check out his show Saturday, February 20th, and my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Paul Mercurio. Please subscribe if you haven't. We've got stuff we've been posting there. And also, if you haven't subscribed to this podcast, do so. Would appreciate it. Always love the support. Hope you enjoyed Patton, and we'll see you guys next week.